It's called The Black Man Is God.
It's
called The Black Man Is God.
Next album.
This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. The easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me?
Uh-huh.
You really do?
Uh-huh.
Anybody on your watch?
Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet. A prophet.
The goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreamed from karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the Jackson. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, uh-huh. Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached and blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them.
What's up, party people? Jay Hicks back with the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. It's been a little bit, but you know, things happen. I don't need to tell any of you guys about that. But the cool thing about taking a little bit of a hiatus from the podcast is that there's ample material for us to discuss today. So it's a very special day for that reason. So this podcast is going to be, as I check my levels here, a little bit of kind of a, you know, like a year in review somewhat, but also somewhat of just a purging of information on topics affecting hip-hop and the world of sports. So I'm glad you joined me today. This would be Thursday, December the 28th, in the middle of the afternoon. So yeah, man, I'm glad to be back on the air, glad to be back on the podcast. And like I said, there's a lot to get to. I don't want to waste too much time on the intro because there's so many things to touch on. And this, again, this will be the Purge podcast. Again, the Purge, the Hip Hop Sports Report Purge podcast. So I'm just going to be purging my opinions, man, left and right. I'm going to try to hit on as many different topics as I can. I got them all written down on my phone right now, and I'm just going to just tear through it, y'all. But like I said, I don't want to take too much time on the introduction, but I did want to take a quick second to recognize a friend of the podcast and frequent Hip Hop Sports Report contributor, Kenneth Hicks, on his new venture known as A Million Little Lights. Please go check it out on obeliskmediagroup.com or the Facebook group is A Million Little Lights. You can follow the Facebook group there to get his latest work. It's really brilliant, man. Shout out to my man Jabril Turner as well, B-Team for Life. Jabril and Kenneth together have collaborated on this project, A Million Little Lights, and essentially it's kind of like a book of short stories online, and it's a completely different way to consume fiction, y'all. I mean, it's just, it's fire, because I've never seen anything like it before. No one's ever attempted anything like this before, where it's this interactive, and it's this current. I mean, if you want to talk about fiction living in time, yeah, you can do that, but how about fiction that's living and breathing right now, and it's being impacted by the things that are in the news going on literally today, this week. These are the things that are going to be affecting the storylines of these characters. So y'all should go check it out, man. You'll find links to videos. I mean, in the work itself, you'll find links to real stories, real live articles of things that are actually happening in the world. You'll find emojis. You'll find memes in what is essentially a book. Like, can you imagine links and memes in a book? I mean, it's unbelievable. Nobody's ever attempted anything like this before, except for them cats down there at Obelisk Media Group. So I implore you all to check that out. If you like fiction, if you like any type of contemporary African-American literature or anything like that, if you know anybody that likes those types of things, please have them check out A Million Little Lights on Facebook. You can follow Obelisk Media Group on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. Obeliskmediagroup.com is the website, and all you got to do is go out there, click on the PDF for the latest episode. So far, they've done 3 editions. I've only read 2. Full disclosure, I've only read 2 to this point. I'm going to read part 3 while I'm on vacation, y'all. But since I am on vacation, I had to take some of this opportunity to get back at my peoples, y'all, and yell at you guys about some sports and hip hop, because there's a whole lot of junk that's being spewed left and right, and I can't take it anymore, y'all. I'm sick of this shit. It's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. The amount of garbage that I'm hearing coming out from this person and that person and this opinion and that opinion, it doesn't make any sense. If you follow HipHopSportsReport.com, you would know that we've already been way ahead of the competition on a lot of this stuff, man. And I'm going to prove it to you once again. Once again, I'm going to show you the ways in which we have peered into the future and have basically predicted what was going to happen or what should be happening, and we're doing it again for about the 10,000th time in the 5 years that we've had this site up and running. So, without further ado, and again, always, hiphopsportsreport.com is the site. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook /HHS Report. You'll find us there. We're on Stitcher Radio and iTunes. Housekeeping is done. Let's get into these opinions, y'all. And the first place I wanted to start off with was in hip-hop, and I have a lot to say about hip-hop right now. The thing that I wanted to get to first, though, this new Eminem album. So here's the Eminem, the quick Eminem story. I've been an Eminem fan since like 1998, since when I was in, you know, I was a young cat, almost high school age, or whenever when he came out, and you know, there was all when he came out, all the white boys in school was dying their hair bleach blonde. Like, that's just what the thing that they did. Everybody was trying to look like Slim Shady back in the late 90s. That's just what the look was. I've been a fan of his music since then. I followed his career throughout the entire process. I feel like he's unfairly treated by the black community because he's white. I feel like he's actually overrated by the white community because he's white. And I don't think any of this is lost on Eminem. None of it is lost on him. But some of his music has kind of, you know, it's been some slippage in the last, you know, 10 or so years. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. As Kenneth Hicks pointed out to me one time, you know, he's like a 47-year-old rapper, 45-year-old rapper. He may not be in his prime anymore. Neither is Floyd Mayweather, right? Like these things happen. The guys get older. You can still be great, but you can get older and maybe things pass you by. Well, Eminem put out another album just not too long after putting out the Trump freestyle at the BET Hip Hop Awards. And the Trump freestyle I thought was pretty good, but it wasn't spectacular. But the message was great. If you're a conservative, you can argue against the message. But I thought the message was pretty solid, right? But what he had to say, though, the freestyle itself, though, the bars, y'all, lacking a little bit, right? So then he comes out with this album, and the lead single is this single with Walk on Water with Beyonce. And let me tell you guys, that is garbage, right? Garbage. And so then I'm like, all right, well, I'm a little nervous now about the whole project, so let's see what the project has to offer as a whole. It's a frisbee, y'all. It's a frisbee. I mean, you know, what we used to call frisbees back in the day were albums, you know, like when they were CDs, right? And you would just throw the disc out the window. This new Eminem project is a straight frisbee, or whatever the digital equivalent of what a frisbee is. That's what Revival is. It's garbage. And I've been an M fan for such a long time. I was disappointed. I really was, man. I mean, I don't know what he was trying to attempt, some new sounds and some new stuff. I don't know. I feel like he's one of those dudes that he has too much control over his own production. And Eminem's been producing for a long time, and his beats are really hit and miss, right? We've seen it with other artists. I would say the same about J. Cole. J. Cole is in charge of a lot of his own production. He'll sit there and produce his entire album himself, and it's like, you know, maybe a little bit of help from a professional wouldn't hurt. Same thing with M, man. M's production, not great. And when you listen to... And you know he can still rap. I mean, that's not even a question. And I find it funny, like a lot of rap fans, particularly black rap fans, were like making light of M's lyricism on the album and teasing it and teasing, you know, how much he tries to put words together, whatever, whatever. And it's like, but you know Eminem can rap, though. Even if he's trying new stuff and it doesn't work, you know he can rap. So we shouldn't be so judgmental about somebody who's actually putting in the work to try to actually write some rhymes that are hot, where on the other hand, those same people are criticizing all these young kids that can't rap at all, right? But they're still getting shine or whatever. So I feel like it's a little hypocritical to be so critical of Eminem for his rhyming. Be that as it may, this Revival thing did not work. Just listen to this. I'm gonna play you something. This is a clip from 2010 off of, I think it was off of Recovery.
Lately I've really feel like I'm rolling for Kelp like Philly. Feel like I'm losing control of myself. I sincerely apologize if all that I sound like is I'm complaining, but life keeps on complicating and I'm debating on leaving this world this evening. Even my girls can see I'm grieving. I try and hide it, but I can't. Why do I act like I'm all high and mighty when inside I'm dying? I'm finally realizing I need help. Can't do it myself, too weak. 2 weeks I've been having ups and downs, going through peaks and valleys, dilly-dallying round with the idea of ending the shit right here. I'm hating my reflection. I walk around the house trying to fight mares. I can't stand what I look like. Yeah.
That's a real song right there, right? That's real bars, real lyrics, real emotion, real structure. Now, check this out, this off of Revival. Check, listen to this. What is this?
What kind of nut drives a Budweiser? Truck finds a slut, tries to surprise up, cuffs, ties up, binds up, cut slices her twice, but the MacDiver must just like it. Rough fuck right in her vagina, blood flies up.
What the hell is that? I had to cut it off before I even wanted to, just because I don't want to subject y'all to that on my podcast. What the hell was that, Eminem? Those aren't bars. That's just gibberish. That's straight gibberish. I mean, I don't know, man. Where was Royce the 5'9"? You know? Like, maybe this is your fault. Like Fab once said, I don't blame you niggas, I blame your old heads. No, I'm not saying Royce is an old head compared to M, but I'm just saying these are his partners, right? These are his boys. Where is Joe Budden? Where is Royce? Where is the rest of Slaughterhouse? Where are the people in M's life that could listen to this and be like, ho, Marshall. No. This is trash, Marshall. We gotta scrap this and start over. Like, where were those people? Was he experiencing pressure from the label? I think Eminem is beyond that point in his career, right? I don't understand how this stuff made it to the consumer's ear. Like, this should have been on the cutting room floor, to say the least. I don't understand it, man. But I do feel like Eminem gets somewhat of a raw deal from fans. Like I said, particularly black fans. I don't feel like a lot of us give him his just due as a great lyricist and one of the great rappers of all time. And I think there's some resentment over the level of popularity that he experiences in record sales, which he receives in large part because of the fact that he's white and he appeals to white listeners and they want to buy his music and they think his music... I've seen white people online, friends of mine are like, man, that Revival is fire. And it's like, no. It's horrible. It's horrible. I'll admit, the album does get a little bit better at the end. The last, you know, 4 or 5 tracks are better than like the first 4 or 5 or 6 tracks or whatever, or 10 or 12 tracks. But it's just not good, man. It's not a good project, and it's Jordan on the Wizards, man. I don't know what to tell you. And I think it's just not hot at all. And I don't think it means that M can't bounce back. And I think people need to understand that. I think Eminem can still turn it around. I mean, we thought he was finished after Relapse, right? Relapse was garbage. And he came back from Relapse. Relapse was so terrible that he even trashed Relapse on his own future projects. I think he trashed it on a couple of times on Recovery, and he may even have trashed it again on Marshall Mathers LP too. M knows that was garbage. He probably knows this is garbage too. But my point is that between Recovery and Marshall Mathers LP 2, there was definitely steps in a positive direction with M's music. And I think a lot of his production, maybe it has to do with the fact that he was white, I don't know, but he's not using them same soul samples that a lot of us grew up on, because maybe his family or his musical influences at a young age didn't lend itself to those types of sounds and that type of music. And so therefore you have a lot of rock infusion in it. You have a lot of just kind of hardcore type beats and things like that. A lot of stuff that sounds like Rick Rubin had a hand in, which he did on this particular project. I think that might have something to do with it. You know, had Eminem, maybe if Eminem was the same talent, but he grew up black, maybe he'd be influenced by Motown and, you know, the soul music of the 70s and R&B of the 80s. And maybe you would hear some different sounds from him. You're not going to hear Earth, Wind, and Fire sample from Eminem. You're just not going to hear it, right? So I don't know, man. I think there's a lot of things that could play into why a lot of his music sounds the way it does and why this particular album was as garbage as it was. But I mean, it was not dope at all, man. And it's disappointing. But again, I applaud him for the message that he put out. There's a lot of anti-Trump stuff on there. He's speaking on behalf of black people in a lot of respects. And I don't think Eminem gets enough credit for being white and having the perspective of his whiteness within this black cultural genre, right? In this genre that is largely black, that was born out of black people and the black struggle and all those things. He's aware of his place and all that. He's aware of his whiteness and how he's benefited from it. And I think that that's why you hear him taking a lot of the positions that he's taken on this record and others in the past. He knows what's up. And I don't think he gets enough credit for that. Notice how M has never even dropped the N-word ever on a record. Never even attempted to, never move toward it. You know, he's the ultimate agitator. He'll pick on celebrities and he'll trash people and stuff like that. But he's never even approached the N-word, at least as since he's been a professional that I know of. He's never been that guy. And he's always had that perspective. And I always appreciate him for that. And now you see somebody of prominence in our culture, in American culture, speaking on behalf of black people that's white. And we need more advocates like him in that regard. We just don't need the music to be trashed. That's all I'm saying. That's my only, that's the only place where I'm kind of drawing the line with M. But other than that, the message was good. I just wish Joe Budden or somebody had pulled him to the side and said, just cut this off. And speaking of Joe Budden, I've been a little critical of Joe in the past. I think everybody's been a little bit critical of Joe Budden at one point or another. Joe Budden is kind of an easy target in some respects anyway. And I think, you know, Joe Budden does a lot of things that irritates a lot of people, but I got to give him his props. Joe Budden has quote unquote retired from music. I don't know if that's to say he'll never do a feature again. He'll never do a Slaughterhouse album. Maybe it just means he's not doing solo albums. I don't know. I find it a little bit annoying when people like him and other rappers move into the podcasting lane, because it's like that's for people like me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to podcast. I'm doing the podcasting thing. I've been doing it for as long, if not longer, than he has. And here he comes moving into it and using his celebrity to his advantage. And he's doing well for himself. And that's a little bit annoying, but I can't say that he doesn't deserve credit. He's transformed himself into the biggest voice in hip hop. Like it or not, that's what it is. He's the biggest voice in hip hop right now. You can have your Elliot Wilsons. You can have your Sways. You can have your Tiggas. You can have your, I don't know, Charlamagne even. Even Charlamagne the God is collaborating with Joe Budden on Revolt. I watched that Revolt thing the other day that they just put out after Christmas. It was Joe Budden and Charlamagne together doing a Revolt TV thing, like a year in review, the dope trash year or whatever it was. I watched that the other day where it looks like they were in each other's closet or whatever. They basically had on the exact same jeans. You know what I mean? That was kind of funny. The jeans were nice, but it was just kind of funny. But, you know, I watched it and it was a pretty good show. It was a little long, but it was good. But you see, like, there's no hesitation for somebody like Charlamagne to sit down and work with somebody like Joe, because he knows what's up. And Joe was on The Everyday Struggle. And from what it sounds like, Complex didn't want to pay the man. And that was probably an oversight on Complex's part. I don't know why anybody else couldn't see that Joe is what was making that show run. I mean, it was obvious. Joe was the star there. He was the talent. My brother and I have kind of gone back and forth on DJ Academics. He's kind of an Academics defender. I don't, you know, no disrespect to him personally. I never met the man, but just as an observer and as a fan of music and hip hop and all that stuff, just looking at Academics as a personality in media, I'm not really a fan of his. I don't really find him particularly funny or interesting or insightful. And that's just my personal opinion. I'm sure he's a great guy. If I'm watching Everyday Struggle, I'm watching to see what Joe Budden had to say. It was like First Take, and Joe Budden is trying to sometimes be a little bit like Skip Bayless was on First Take or whatever and say these outlandish things. But it's just like that, like when they had the parade of when Stephen A left, and then I think it was just Skip, or before Stephen A became full time, it was just Skip Bayless, and they used to parade these dudes in that couldn't stack up to what Skip was, and Skip was the star of the show. That's how I view Everyday Struggle. Joe Budden is the star of the show. Well, the star just walked out on the show, and now I don't know what you have over there anymore. It seems like Academics may be in trouble in terms of going into next year. He's had a great year, but just in terms of what the future holds for that particular platform, I don't know. They're going to have to find a suitable replacement. And if they do find a replacement, they're going to need him to be him or her to be a little bit provocative. But then that's going to come off like it's not genuine necessarily. So I don't know what move they make. But if it's just the two of them and they rotate a guest or whatever, like the woman's name on the show, I apologize. I don't remember her name offhand. But if it's just academics and her and then they rotate a third guest, I don't see that panning out in the long run. They have to find some type of replacement for Joe Budden because he was the talent and they let him go. Money talks, bullshit walks. My pops taught me that a long time ago, you know what I mean? And when they didn't cough up that loot that Joe was looking for, he took his talents elsewhere and has apparently signed a $5 million deal with Revolt TV, with Diddy. So that's there you go. Now, I don't know if that's been confirmed or if that's true or not, but Joe Budden is winning. And that's why I got to tip my cap to him. You know what I mean? He bounced right back. He just had a baby. He's left Everyday Struggle. He sounds like he got a what I would assume would be a massive raise elsewhere, and he's gonna probably have the latitude to do whatever it is he wants to do over there at Revolt. He's collaborating with Charlamagne just moments after having left Complex. Like, he's landed on his feet and is trending upward in 2018. And like I said, man, he's the biggest voice in hip hop right now. I mean, I don't see anybody else. I would say Charlamagne's probably second, but you know, your Angie Martinez's and you know, your Ebro's and your Peter Rosenberg and all these folks, like they are not as hot as Joe is right now. Even your Justin Hicks. I mean, Justin Hicks, as great as he is, he's not even as hot as Joe is right now. So you just got to tip your cap to the guy. He's come off smelling like guest room soap. You know what I mean? He's doing pretty well. And meanwhile, Academics is over here beefing with Desus and Mero, and they're the other guys that I'd put in that Charlamagne Joe Budden category. But well, Academics is over here getting clowned by those guys, and I don't really understand that beef entirely or how that got started or whatever. But it doesn't look great for Ak right now. Like just not having his partner in crime there, who in my opinion was carrying the show. And then to move over into crying on Xbox or whatever and getting clowned by Desus and Mero. Man, I'm getting a little emotional. I've been getting money since before y'all was with y'all company, man. Like, bruh, can you not? can you just not do that? Like, it's just bad. It's a bad look. I hope the best for DJ Academics, even though he's not a DJ. I hope he does well in the new year. And I hope for his sake that he bounces back. And while we're on the subject of hip-hop media, I wanted to take a moment to say rest in paradise to Combat Jack. Combat Jack was a lawyer, I believe, an entertainment lawyer, and he moved into the podcasting lane a few years ago, and everybody and their mom was getting interviewed on the Combat Jack show just a few years ago. We actually shared a mutual guest, Master Ace, who was on our podcast a couple of years back, did at least one episode with Combat. For Hip Hop Sports Report, we want to say rest in peace to Combat. Hip hop lost a big voice with that one, so that was unfortunate. But so another thing that was in the news lately, from the hip hop standpoint, was Black Thought freestyle. Right, I don't know if any of y'all heard that. If you haven't heard the Black Thought freestyle yet, shame on you. You're pretty much failing as a hip hop fan if you haven't heard his latest freestyle that he did with Funk Flex. It was about 10 minutes long of flames. It was 10 minutes of pure flames. And I'm kind of at the point where I'm ready to admit or just hand it over to Black Thought, man. I think he's the GOAT freestyler, man. Like, of anybody that you're going to listen to coming to somebody's radio station and deliver a freestyle of however many minutes, I think Thought might be the one, man. And what was interesting too is Black Thought did a spot, I think it was Sway in the Morning, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong, but I think it was with Sway. Him and Method Man were in there together. I don't even know what the occasion was that him and Meth were in there together, because I honestly didn't listen to the interview, but they both was dropping bars. Meth's were written. I liked what Meth spit. I thought it was dope. And then Thought comes off the dome completely, right? Or I believe it was off the dome. And he still bodied Method Man, and Meth almost admitted as such in the room. He's one of the more forgotten MCs in history, right? Because of the fact that he does music with The Roots, and they're a band, and he's never dropped a solo record. For those reasons, he's kind of forgotten. but he shouldn't be. He's clearly one of the greatest rappers that ever lived. If y'all haven't checked that out already, you're messing up. The Cam and Mace beef, that was something that happened since the last time we spoke to y'all. Mace comes out of nowhere and he just starts going at Cam for like no reason. And it was weird because he was like even, I think like apparently he was making up stuff on there talking about he slept with Cam's sister or something like that, and Cam doesn't have a sister. It was just a weird freestyle, man. But or excuse me, a weird diss record. But it was better than Cam's diss record, because Cam's rebuttal, you know, sounded like it was done on my son's Fisher Price recording device over here. He didn't mix it. I don't know why he didn't mix it. I don't really get why you wouldn't mix your diss record unless he was just really short on time and just was trying to turn it around as soon as he could. He didn't want a Nicki Minaj Meek Mill situation where he just takes forever to respond and then he can't come up with nothing. I guess that's what he called himself doing. But personally, my take on it, I'm still riding with Cam because I just think Cam is a more credible artist than Mace. Cam is Cam, Mace is Mace, right? Cam is, whether you like him as a rapper or not, he's one of the more influential guys on rap culture in the last 15 years. And Mace is a guy that had a nice career, but it was really kind of only in that window with Diddy and Bad Boy in the late 90s. Then he disappears, then he comes back, then he disappears, then he goes down south, he becomes a pastor, then he's Pastor Mace, then he comes back, and welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. And then he left again. You know, like, why are we welcoming you back again? And now he's coming back out of nowhere, he's dissing Cam and doing videos with a wetsuit on. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, there's just no rhyme or reason to how he's moving. Maybe there was some, I think I maybe have heard that on Cam's mixtape that came out a couple of weeks ago, that maybe he had a shot at Mace on there, and that's what provoked Mace's response or diss record. But Cam's been dissing Mace for years. Like, Cam was, and I know Cam doesn't classify it as a diss, quote unquote, but Cam was trashing Mace back on the Diplomatic Immunity 2 record. He made a whole song about him, the Father Forgive Us record. Remember that? And I remember to this day, I still remember what Cam said on that record. Cam basically said, "Harlem hustler, I can't at all knock it, but you hard when you go in the Lord's pockets." And then he said, "Put it in the offering, cash credit, we'll take it all, even down to porcelain." He basically saying that the whole Pastor Mace thing was just a work, just to try to him. It was a hustle, basically. He was hitting a lick. So there's no reason to believe that today what Mace is doing is for any other reason other than money and attention. That's all it appeared to be, right? So, I mean, even though Mace had a better song, Mace's song was better than Cam's song. But I'm still riding with Cam and the beef. Like it doesn't matter. Like, it just, because Cam has never left. He's been consistent all these years. And Mace, he comes, he goes. You know, both of these dudes are probably past the prime. But, like, why is it that Mace is just coming out of nowhere and I'm supposed to give him all this credit for making this diss record that he could have been crafting for the last 12 years since Cam first was going at Mace? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. I didn't buy it. So I'll wrap up the hip hop portion of this podcast talking a little bit about the album of the year. We saw that Jay-Z and Kendrick Lamar got nominated for tons of Grammys. So good for them. Jay-Z has, I think, 21 Grammys in his career. 21 Grammys. I'm a savage nigga. 21 Grammys, I'm 7. But Kendrick has his fair share of Grammy wins and Grammy noms too, so he's going to be right there with it. I know both of them got nominated for Album of the Year. And what else got nominated? Let me look that up again. I think it was Migos, the Culture record, 444, Damn, Rhapsody's album, and Tyler, the Creator, which somehow got nominated. I'm still stunned that got nominated, Tyler, the Creator, but Rhapsody's album was very good. If you haven't heard that, please go check it out. Her and Ninth Wonder kind of did their thing on that. Migos, Culture. Migos had such a great year. I can't really argue with them being in the category, even though I wouldn't put them in the class of a Jay-Z or a Kendrick Lamar. And then, and just speaking of those two, I think I heard Joe Budden and Charlamagne on their program. One of them said that this Kendrick album wasn't about nothing. And I thought that was a little unfair because Kendrick had a theme, right, all throughout Good Kid, Mad City. And then he had a theme all throughout To Pimp a Butterfly, which, you know, maybe it was even too much of a reach of a theme for To Pimp a Butterfly. You could argue that. But that was the criticism that people got. People were like, man, I like To Pimp a Butterfly, man, but I just wish he would rap more. You know what I mean? Like, people, like, it seemed like fans didn't want that much theme in it. Like, they just wanted a little less of that and a little bit more just bars and songs and rapping. Like, you have to strike that balance, right? Which is what made Good Kid, Mad City great. Generally, though, there was not, like, an accepted universal theme for Damn as a complete project, right? Not like the other ones, anyway. And so for him to not do that this time around, he kind of was maybe compensating back the other direction, just kind of coming with some more songs, just a couple more features, got Rihanna on there, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff. I mean, like, I don't think it's fair to then criticize him and say, this album wasn't about nothing, because it was the same media people and fans and stuff and Twitter, Black Twitter, whoever, scrutinizing To Pimp a Butterfly. Be that as it may, I still believe that the Grammy for Album of the Year should go to... Well, before I get to that, there's one other album that I wanted to recognize. Saha the Prince, No Dope on Sundays. Fire! Fire! Yes! Yes, this is what we needed. This is what we needed. And it came at a time where there was other projects out there. The Jadakiss and Fabolous Freddy vs. Jason record had some bright spots, but it wasn't maybe quite what we expected from them. It was still very good, though. But No Dope on Sundays, man. I mean, Saha the Prince. I can't say enough about that record. That, to me, was probably the third best album of the year. I would put that in the top three with 444 by Jay-Z and Damn by Kendrick Lamar. I would put that in that class. It was that good. And if you haven't heard Saha, Saha's not a rookie, y'all. He's been around the block for some time. Kanye first introduced him to the masses long time ago, you know, maybe back around 2009, 2010. And I believe this is his first major label release. It was everything we could have hoped for, man. It was just fantastic. And the lyricism, y'all, is just on point. I mean, it's there. There was this one record, or I think it was on the Moving Around record he has with Schoolboy Q. Well, forget it, man. Who could do it better than he could do it? I'm just going to play it for you myself right now. Here it is, right here.
Let me tell you about the one time I had a rental with a half a bag of the Sacramento. Seen cops lights flash through it out the window. Right there across the street from Allen Temple. Shit, that was my MO for, I had a demo. And I had a pencil, but it had the tinto. Then I had the benzo, now I got a limo. Shit, I always knew a nigga had potential. Blow a bag of endo like a bad Nintendo. If I had your bimbo, it was accidental. Now I'm acting nimble, cause she acting simple. Back to running circles, run the A like an at symbol.
That's bars. That's bars right there. And Saha, you did it, bruh. You're on par with Jay-Z and Kendrick Lamar this year for that project, No Dope on Sundays. The title track is everything, man. There's a sick beat change in the middle of it, and then he comes back, and then Pusha T polishes it off. Pusha T's hilarious, man, because I've never seen another MC get more credit for rapping about the same subject all the time. Like, every other rapper, we criticize that they don't diversify their subject matter. But Pusha T gets a pass on it. We only want to hear Pusha T rap about one thing. If he ain't rapping about that, we're not interested. And if he does rap about it, we love it. And it's just funny to me. Like, no other rapper gets that pass. He's basically like the Kyle Korver of rap. You know, he's great at what he does, but he only does one thing. But he's great at it. But that's it. That's all he does. But if I had to say album of the year, of those three, those would be the finalists. And the winner is, drum roll please, 444, y'all. 444 got the higher rating on Hip Hop Sports Report on the tail of the tape. 444, in my opinion, had a higher degree of difficulty, and that's what separates it from everything else. Jay-Z was essentially left for dead because the Magna Carta record did not age well. It didn't have a lot of replay value, and people weren't really checking for it in the way that they've checked, you know, they continuously check for other older Hov records, right? And so people thought he was washed. And people thought that he had made too much money, and people were tired of hearing rap about money. They didn't want to hear him rap about drugs anymore, because he doesn't get the pass Pusha T gets. They don't want to hear him rap about how much money he has. They didn't like him rapping about art. They don't want to hear him rapping about his wife, at least talking about how good things are, right? So he had to kind of go to a different place, and the way that he rapped about His mother coming out of the closet to him, and just obviously the stuff with his family. It was moving grown men to tears. That's what 444 was doing. There were grown men that I know personally who were moved to tears by listening to some of the songs on that record. And that separates it for me from Damn and from No Dope on Sundays and a lot of other stuff that came out this year. Because Jay-Z's 47, just turned 48 years old, because he was left for dead by a lot of hip-hop fans and it became cliche to just trash Jay-Z and say he was washed, and because of the fact that he had never been this personal on a record before, all these things kind of came in. He put it in a cauldron and mixed it up, and the result of it was this beautiful work. It was short, but it was sweet. The production was dope. It was just him. And as Vince Hicks and I had discussed on the podcast over the summer, the fact that it was just No ID and Hove pretty much by themselves kind of gave it an intimacy that we had not seen from Jay-Z before. And that made the difference. And I think that that is why it was the best project of 2017, in my opinion. It was a side of Jay-Z we had never seen before. And this is somebody that we had seen. We'd seen Jay-Z for 20 years, and he showed us something new. That's what I mean when I say the degree of difficulty was higher. People weren't checking for Jay-Z. Jay-Z had said everything that he wanted to say for the last 18, 19 years. And he came with something completely different, and it was fantastic. That is greatness. That is being able to read a defense when you know that they have tape on you, right? Or when you know that the defense is gearing their defense to stop you. And you score 30 on them anyways. Or you drop 40 on their double team. That's what Hove did. Kendrick just put out a great record. And it was a great record. Jay-Z was facing obstacles that Kendrick has never dealt with in his career to this point. And he overcame all of it and he surpassed them all. 444 was the album of the year. Well, if y'all thought I was hoarding a lot of opinions about hip-hop, you ain't seen nothing yet, y'all. Let's get into some sports. Some sports. I want to start with the college football playoff. There's a lot of controversy around Thanksgiving about the playoff and who should get in and who shouldn't get in. And I was pretty vocal about it on Twitter. If you follow the twits, I was pretty vocal about how I felt the four should look, the final four. Clemson was a no-brainer after they stomped Miami in the ACC championship game. Oklahoma was a no-brainer. They stomped out TCU. They're a no-brainer. Georgia, SEC champion, avenge their loss to Auburn. Pretty much a no-brainer. The question became, do we put in Ohio State? Do we put in Alabama? Do we put in a third team like a USC, Auburn, the Central Florida get some love? Or, you know, that's kind of where it came down. And particularly, obviously, it was Alabama versus Ohio State. I'm from Ohio. I'm not going to hide that fact. I'm not going to run from that. So if you guys want to call me biased, you can call me whatever you want. I don't believe Alabama deserved to get into the tournament. And the reason is very simple. But and I should point out, Alabama, they could easily win this playoff. Like, they could beat Clemson, sure. And then they could beat Georgia or Oklahoma, absolutely. None of that would shock me. They may very well be the best team in the country. Here's my thing. Why did we want a playoff? Why did we put a playoff in place? Why were we screaming from the mountaintops for a playoff system instead of the BCS computer system? There was one reason. Because we all wanted it to be decided on the field, right? We wanted our champion to be decided on the field. So this was the best thing that we could come up with. Right, they came up with a 4-team playoff, not a 6 or 8 team. Maybe down the road you can make an argument for it, but no matter how many teams you put in it, somebody's going to be pissed off that they got left out, right? And they're going to be bitching about it. That's just the way it is. We did not want to guess about who the best team was, right? So if that's the motive, if the motive is to decide it on the field, how can you put Alabama in the Final Four when they did not beat anybody, right? As Mark Hicks, friend of the podcast, pointed out, we should abolish preseason rankings if we're going to be doing this playoff system. If maybe you can continue to have the AP and the coaches ranking starting after week one. Maybe there's a place for that. But why do we have preseason rankings? Why don't we call this the preseason podcast of the year? Because it doesn't make any sense, and it's tongue in cheek, right? I mean, we're making fun of ourselves a little bit. It's self-deprecating, and it's funny. We're the preseason podcast of the year. Now, have they voted on a podcast of the year yet? I don't know, but we're the preseason podcast of the year. Nobody is better than our podcast in the preseason when it doesn't count, okay? That's what you need to understand. And so we have these preseason rankings, and the de facto number one in every preseason is Alabama. Now, I'll admit they've earned a lot of that respect. They've gone to the national championship many times. They've won multiple national championships in the Saban era, like three of them or four of them. I get it. They are great. They're a great program. They deserve to be considered to be near the top. I respect that. But in the preseason, though, it serves no purpose. All it does is skew the rankings going forward. We project them to be number one, and then we projected Florida State to be number three in the preseason. Well, Florida State, they lost their quarterback, and that's a big blow. But if they're the number three team in the country, they shouldn't have collapsed to the extent that they did, right? If they were the true number three team in the country, look at Ohio State a few years ago. They took a third-string quarterback and won the national championship with them. So if Florida State is really the third-best team in the country, they should have been able to still put out a respectable product of a football team without Francois at quarterback. They were garbage this year. It didn't make any sense. So, no, they were never the number three team in the country. Alabama beating them on a neutral field is not that impressive. And then when you go back through Alabama's resume, who did they beat? I think they beat Mississippi State or something like that. That's not that great of a team. They beat LSU, the same LSU that lost to Troy. So what did Alabama prove? They had one game against a team that we know can play. Auburn in the Iron Bowl. And what happened? They got smashed by Auburn in the Iron Bowl. It was not competitive. That game was not that close, right? That's the only game they played this year. They did not make it to their championship game in their conference. I understand the fact that people feel that you can't, it's unfair if two great teams are coming from the same conference, it's unfair to kind of, or even in the same division within that conference, it's unfair to hold one of them out of the championship picture. Like, I get all that, right? But I don't know that that's what happened here. I mean, based on what took place on the field, you could easily make the case they were the third best team in the SEC. Meanwhile, Ohio State, in spite of their loss against Oklahoma, which is a great team, and their bad loss at Iowa, which was a stinker, and I think, in my opinion, was more of product of having won an emotional comeback game the week before at home against Penn State, where JT Barrett was perfect in the fourth quarter of that game. You turn around and then you have to go on the road to play a respectable program, you're going to have a letdown. And that's what happens. That's what happens sometimes. You have those letdown games based on the schedule. You have a big emotional home night game victory against a team, and then you turn around and go on the road and you get beat by a mediocre team. We see it all the time. It's the same reason why Miami destroyed Notre Dame in primetime. Everybody was like, oh, the Hurricanes, a turnover chain, right? And then we turn around and they struggled against, I think, Virginia at home the next week, and they won the game going away, but they looked bad in that first half. And then their first road game after that big win over Notre Dame, they got killed at Pitt, I believe. So we see these things happen all the time, and I think that's what Ohio State fell victim to. Not to say that they shouldn't be penalized for it, because they should be. But we also saw Ohio State beat Wisconsin in their bowl game, win the Big Ten. They beat Penn State at home. They took apart Michigan State. They beat Michigan on the road. So you could argue that those games, including a Michigan game on the road in a rivalry game, you could argue that those victories were all more impressive than anything Alabama did. And yet, the reason why Ohio State was kept out was because of a bad loss rather than their strong victories. And I don't know if I agree with that philosophy. And Alabama doesn't even have a single strong victory on their resume. So no, they should not have been included. And for those of you who want to point to Ohio State getting in last year when they didn't even make their conference championship game, I did advocate for Ohio State getting in the tournament last year, but it was not over Penn State. I thought both Penn State and Ohio State should have been in over Washington last year. And that's why I felt that I was okay with Ohio State being included because of who else Ohio State had beaten in spite of the fact that they did not go to their conference championship game. Alabama didn't have anything. They didn't have any wins against anybody. And everybody kept saying on television, look at the eye test with Alabama. It's like, how can we trust our eyes when they didn't play anybody, y'all? How are y'all not getting this? It just doesn't add up to me. If we haven't seen them play a good team, we can't use the eye test as a reason to put them in the playoff. our eyes did not witness them play anybody and win. So for some reason, people didn't understand that. Whatever, right? That's how I felt about college football. Let's move on. Oh, and by the way, as far as the playoff, I will make a quick prediction. Like I said, I could see Alabama winning the whole thing. I can. I'm picking Oklahoma over Clemson in the final. But my only reservation with that is I feel like Oklahoma's the hot team that everybody's picking. And I don't like going with the crowd. So I'm a little scared about that pick. But I would pick Oklahoma over Clemson in the final. And the Sooners, shout out to my cousin Monique and Aaron, would win the national championship. Let's move on to the NFL. Playoffs. Playoffs! 9 teams have clinched so far. Your boy had 5 of those 9 correct in the preseason. And 2 other ones were the Texans and the Packers. I'm giving myself a break on that one. That's a mulligan. I'm giving myself 2 mulligans on that because of injury, right? If you would have told me at the beginning of the season that Aaron Rodgers was going to miss half the season, I wouldn't have picked the Packers to win the NFC North. I actually picked them to win the Super Bowl, but if I knew Aaron Rodgers was going to sit out half the season, that pick would not have been made. I think you can take me on my word on that one. And I said on our preseason podcast before the NFL season with Anthony Houston and Kenneth Hicks that I thought Minnesota, we didn't talk about them much, but I said Minnesota was a very good team. They would have been my pick had I known that Rodgers was going to be out. And the same thing with the Houston Texans between, Watson wasn't the quarterback at the start, but between all the injuries they had on defense with J.J. Watt and Merciless went down and all that stuff, there's no way I would be picking the Texans had I known that they would have had that many injuries. But if they have all their guys, I think they're right there with Jacksonville competing for the top spot in that division. Additionally, I also had the Seahawks, Titans, and Ravens making the playoffs, and they still have a shot going into Sunday. So, that would be of the 12 playoff teams, I think that would give us a total of 8 of them if I got those 3 correct as well, and I think that's still possible. The Patriots are still the clear favorites in the AFC. I mean, the clear favorites. We saw what they did in Pittsburgh a couple of weeks ago. Miss me with all that, the call, the touchdown, it should have been a touchdown, should have been with Jesse James or whatever, the road dog. We all know the rule. The rule is flawed. I think we can piece that much together. The rule is flawed, but it was interpreted correctly. The guy did not complete the motion of the catch at the end of it, and it should not have counted. And then that's on Pittsburgh for screwing up the following 2 plays. By not getting out of bounds, not scoring on that first play, and then Ben throwing the interception and blaming it on the offensive coordinator after the game, Todd Haley, who I can't stand personally. I can't stand anybody on the Steelers, but I especially can't stand Todd Haley. He's not a great coordinator. He's living off the product of the talent that's around him, in my opinion. But he's the offensive coordinator, and Ben basically threw him under the bus. Now, what you have here is you have a team that's facing all kinds of turmoil. James Harrison's just left. And people are still unsure about him leaving and what that means for the team. And there's questions about all that stuff and there's unrest in the locker room, it sounds like, from that. Ben Roethlisberger has been taking pot shots at his coaching staff all season. And Antonio Brown is out right now, and we don't know what his status is going to be going into the playoffs. Ryan Shazier is out. He's probably out for the season. He's their best defensive player, just about next to Casey Hayward or along with Casey Hayward. The point is, I don't know how anybody can trust the Steelers, man. Like, they've been playing down to their competition all season. Their best win was actually in week 2 when they beat the Vikings at home. But back then, we didn't know the Vikings were what they were, and that was Case Keenum's first start. So you kind of give Minnesota a pass on that one. But if you look at the Steelers this season, first week of the season, they're at Cleveland. They won by 3 points at the Browns. The Browns are winless, in case you didn't know. They went to Chicago in week 3. They got beat. They got destroyed by Jacksonville in week 5. They beat Kansas City, but that was a competitive game at Kansas City. Good win, right? But they beat Detroit at Detroit. Another decent win, but only beat them by 5. They're not killing teams. They barely beat the Colts at home. They barely beat the Packers in overtime with Brett Hundley at quarterback. They struggled at Cincinnati. They barely beat the Ravens at home. They let the Ravens, no offense-ass Ravens, score 38 on them in Pittsburgh. They lost to the Pats. Like, this team has been playing down to their competition all season, and people think that they're for somehow a favorite to win the Super Bowl or at least go to the Super Bowl. I don't see it. I have never seen it with the Steelers. It's still the Patriots' thing to lose. I mean, it's just what it is. I mean, if you can bet your money against Tom Brady if you want to. I stopped betting against Tom Brady in 2005, okay? And that's why I ride for him to this day. And more often than not, you bet on Brady and Belichick, okay? And speaking of Brady, the MVP discussion. It's Tom Brady, okay? Like, we wrote an article on October 19th saying that Brady and LeBron would win MVP in their respective sports this season. Brady is very close to capturing his third MVP. It's been elusive. He probably could have had it. He's had better seasons where he didn't win the trophy, but he should probably get the award this year, right? He's basically top three in every major passing statistical category, and he's played every game, and that was the same thing that y'all knocked him for last year, right? Because he sat out four games. Y'all knocked him for that. Y'all docked him MVP votes for that. Well, he's played every game, so don't turn around and give it to Carson Wentz, because Carson Wentz has missed three and a half, four games or whatever it was. So you can't have it both ways. Brady's played every game, and he's top three in just about every relevant passing statistic. His team is first place in the AFC, and he's going to get a bye. They've only lost three times all season. He's done it without Julian Edelman. He's done it without Malcolm Mitchell all season. He's done it without Chris Hogan for half the season. He's done it with a banged up and or garbage offensive line. His defense was trash for half the season. His defense was only good when they placed poor competition. The constant, once again, is Brady. Rex Burkhead is in and out. James White was hurt recently. Like, all these things around him is still the same, man. It's still the same old Tom. Give Tom the award, man. And I love Todd Gurley. I was the only one talking about Todd Gurley back in October when Todd Gurley was still balling. Because he's been balling all season, but I was the only one that recognized him. I didn't see Todd Gurley get talked up in any MVP conversation or any article back in October. Your boy had him in October. Go look it up. It's on the website. I said the only person standing in Brady's way is Carson Wentz and Todd Gurley. And now Todd Gurley's balling, and everybody wants to hand him the award at the 11th hour. And it's like, no, man, Brady's been the constant all year for you types, for you media types. And Todd Gurley's been in the picture for me personally. And as great as Todd Gurley is, which I said he was at the start of the season, I said that Todd Gurley was still one of the best running backs in football coming off a garbage season, which was not his fault. And shout out to my man Anthony Houston for picking the Rams to win the NFC West. Not many people were doing that. He went out on a limb, and he was right. That was a great call on his part. And I co-signed the fact that Todd Gurley was an elite football player, and he's proved it in 2017. Todd Gurley's awesome. He deserves MVP consideration. He should not get the award over Tom Brady. All right? I would put him second, though. I would put Carson Wentz third, followed by Antonio Brown fourth and Russell Wilson fifth. That's my list. NFC is still a toss-up. I mean, those teams that are in the mix, I mean, it's weird because the quarterbacks that we all know and love, those guys are going to be your wild card NFC teams, right? That's like your Cam Newtons and, you know, either Russell Wilson or Matt Ryan. Drew Brees is, they're going to be playing in the wild card round. It looks like the Saints. Meanwhile, you have Carson Wentz being replaced by Nick Foles. So it's going to be Nick Foles, who's a backup, Case Keenum, who's a backup. And, you know, they're going to get the byes. And, you know, so it's just weird. It's just a weird dynamic in the NFC with the quarterback thing. I don't know if it's going to be Seattle or who, if they're competing with Atlanta for that last playoff spot. So Seattle or Atlanta. I have more faith in Seattle, even though I don't think they're going to go very far this year, but I kind of feel like Atlanta should be there because they're the defending NFC champs. So to beat a man, you got to beat the man. So give them a shot to defend their crown. I kind of feel like they should be in there. But as far as which team comes out the NFC, I'm going to reprise my pick now that the Packers are out of the mix. I've been kind of doubting the Eagles all year, and I was kind of wrong about them. I was wrong about Carson Wentz. They've been fantastic. I think the Eagles' defense and special teams is dynamic. Even without Jordan Hicks on defense and Darren Sproles in the special teams game, they've still been fantastic all year. I would give the edge. I really like the Rams, y'all. It's tough, man. It's tough. I really like the Rams. I really respect what the Saints have done this year. I'm going to go out on a limb and pick the team that I said at the start of the year on that preseason podcast, why are they not getting enough Super Bowl buzz? And that's the Carolina Panthers. I'm going to say the Panthers-Patriots Super Bowl as of this moment. And I could easily be wrong about that, but I just really like the Panthers still, what they're doing. I think Cam's shoulder was not 100% at the start of the year. He's kind of healed up a little bit throughout the course of the year, if you can make sense of that. The defense is kind of coming around. If Luke Kuechly can stay healthy, if Cam Newton can stay healthy, that's a tough team. When their offense is rolling, that's a really good offense there. They're just going to have to win three games. That's the only tricky part. They're going to have to win three games, and they're probably all going to be on the road. So that's the only reason why I don't think they you know, that might stop them from doing it. I don't know how the matchups will fall just yet. Let me put it to you like this. Minnesota's defense is unbelievable. I just don't know if Case Keenum is going to get them there. And even if he does, I'm not buying into this narrative of the Vikings playing at home in the Super Bowl as a good thing. Like, people are making it sound like, oh, Minnesota, from this point forward, they might not play another road game. And I think they would, technically, if they were to advance and play Philly. I think they'd have to go to Philly. But that aside, you know, there's a possibility that they would play both of their playoff games in Minnesota and then play the Super Bowl in Minnesota. That's on the table right now. I don't think that's a good thing. You know how much hoopla comes with playing in the Super Bowl? I'm not believing that that's going to work out well for them. Like, that they're gonna play in the Super Bowl and then like, they're not going to have to deal with all that hoopla in their own gym, no less. And the story of, you guys are at home now, you're supposed to win because you're at home. Like, the pressure of that. And meanwhile, they're going to be playing against Tom Brady and Belichick in their eighth Super Bowl. No, that's not going to work out well for them, I don't think. But I like the Rams and I like the Panthers the most in the NFC. So I'll stick with the Panthers. I'll say, you know, with the Rams closely following them, and then maybe the Saints. I don't know. The NFC is a crapshoot. It is. Judge me, okay? It's a crapshoot, whatever. Let's move to some NBA real quick before we wrap up the show. Oh, before I do that, a couple other side notes. The Jimmy Garoppolo train? Guess who was a conductor on that train? Your boy. That's right. Go back and listen to our podcast back in April. I was saying that the Cleveland Browns needed to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo, and he's done nothing but be a god out in San Francisco to the point that they're actually calling him Jimmy Jesus. Woo! Jimmy Garoppolo is awesome. And the Browns missed out for one reason or another. I don't know why it didn't happen, but Jimmy G should have been in Cleveland. Whatever. Now the Browns, I don't know if they're gonna have a good look. Everybody in Ohio is going to be watching Ohio State and USC tomorrow, so everybody's going to get a good look at Sam Darnold to see if he should be the number one pick for the Browns. I want them to take either Darnold or Rosen. I think they both should come out. And now Saquon Barkley's even saying he might not come out. All these dudes are basically talking about not coming out because the Browns have two picks in the top five. And now all these MFers are over here talking about, oh, I don't know if I want to come out. Eh, maybe, you know. Y'all all need to bring your asses out, and two of y'all niggas need to go to Cleveland. That's how I feel about it. Two of y'all need to end up in Cleveland. So give me one of those quarterbacks and give me Saquon Barkley, because you can look at the Rams, you can look at the Cowboys, you can look at what the Saints are doing offensively. A good running game will take you very far. So give me a reliable tailback like Saquon and put him with that quarterback of the future, and you got it. And if you have to trade up to get that running back, then go ahead and do it, man. Don't be scared of that John Dorsey, okay? Go ahead and get your running back if need be. A running back that's elite can change things, so we've seen that. So there's my take on Jimmy Garoppolo. There's my thing on the Browns. Now let's move to the NBA. Here's my big NBA takeaway right now, y'all. People, fans, media members, whomever that judge basketball, that watch basketball, people really don't take situation and circumstance into enough account when evaluating players. Very simple. Exhibit A, Kyrie Irving. Who said that Kyrie Irving left to be the man because people like you were saying that guys like Dame Lillard and John Wall and Kemba Walker and Kyle Lowry were better than him? Okay, your boy right here. Your boy said that, all right? And what happened? Kyrie's gone to Boston, and now he's an MVP candidate, okay? Is it any mystery as to what that is? Okay, you guys didn't give him the respect that he deserved because he was playing second fiddle to LeBron. That's what it was. In order to get that respect, he needed to spread his wings. It's the same reason Kobe wanted to divorce himself from Shaq, okay? He saw himself as a greater player. He knew he could accomplish more on his own, but he knew that he couldn't do it in the shadow of this other great player. So he had to get off the Cavs. That's pretty much all it was. If y'all would have respected Kyrie properly, instead of saying that you won't trade Josh Jackson for him, or that, you know, all these other teams aren't ponying up to trade for Kyrie Irving when he was available, then this is what you get. You get Danny Ainge snaking everybody and looking like a genius once again, okay? That's the result of that. Kyrie Irving was always phenomenal. He was always one of the elite players in the league. He's top 10 to me, and he's been top 10 for some time. But you guys didn't want to give him the credit he deserved. So he left, and now he's an MVP candidate. And it wasn't within 2 weeks Within 2 weeks, I was seeing on Facebook all these Facebook sports groups that I'm a part of and all this other nonsense. Man, Kyrie the truth. Man, I put Kyrie ahead of Wall. Man, I put Kyrie ahead of Dame. Man, Kyrie nice. Man, Kyrie, Kyrie. Man, Kyrie. Y'all weren't saying shit about Kyrie 2 weeks ago when he played for the Cavs, okay? 2 weeks into the NBA season, now all of a sudden Kyrie's the truth and he's better than all these other guys. I don't want to hear it. Kyrie Irving didn't get better from last year to this year. His numbers are actually down. But because he's on his own squad, you give him respect for being on his own squad, in spite of the fact that he was never in a real position to succeed when he had his own squad in Cleveland, because that team was not ready yet, and he was only 21 years old himself. Y'all ignored all that. Y'all didn't want to hear me when I was telling you Kyrie was the truth, and now all of a sudden he's an MVP candidate in Boston, and everybody thinks he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Whatever. But that's Exhibit A. Exhibit B, Kevin Love. Same thing. Kevin Love is in Minnesota. When he was in Minnesota that last year, he was considered a consensus top 10 player in the NBA. Everybody looked at him that way. He goes to Cleveland, and now everybody thinks he fell off or that he stinks or that he's trash or whatever else because his numbers went down, as if his numbers weren't supposed to go down. That was the whole idea of putting him with LeBron and Kyrie. He was going to be on a team where he was going to take less shots. He was going to not be the man on the Cavs. Of course his numbers went down. That doesn't mean he was a better player then. He's regressed as a player. It just doesn't make any sense. Yeah, his minutes were down, you know, in Cleveland. He's on a better team. There's less responsibility. He averaged 18 and a half shots a game in Minnesota his last year there. 2 years before that, he averaged 19 shots a game. He's never averaged more than 14 and a half shots a game in the 4 years he's been in Cleveland. He's averaging only 13.8 field goal attempts a night right now. But that's by design. That's by design. He's not supposed to take more shots than LeBron. He wasn't supposed to take more shots than Kyrie. He fell in line. He was supposed to be the number three guy, and that's what he was. But he's still putting up 20 points and 10 rebounds right now. He put up 19 and 11 last year. And people are acting like he regressed as a player. His percentages are up. Kevin Love is a slimmer guy playing in more meaningful games. He's in his physical prime. He's 28 years old right now. 29, excuse me. He's at his physical peak, playing in game 7 of the NBA Finals, going up against the Warriors, the highest level of basketball we've seen in years. He's playing in these games. Kevin Love is not worse now than when he was in Minnesota. He's better now than he's ever been. But y'all don't want to hear that, though. Everybody thinks he was top 10 before. Now he won't even make anybody's top 25 list. It doesn't make any sense. Now, I wouldn't put him top 10 right now. But that's a product of other people getting better. But not that many people have gotten better than him. If you put him back on another garbage team, he could put up 26 and 12 again. It just doesn't... I mean, you guys... I mean, another example. Chris Paul, same thing. I told y'all Chris Paul was nice. I told y'all Chris Paul was not the primary reason why the Clippers never got to the past the second round. But too many people said, nah, CP0 is overrated. He never made it to the conference finals, which all of a sudden became a metric of greatness with him. Nobody else is held to that standard, but he is for some reason. And then all of a sudden, it's, you know, Chris Paul's not that great. Chris Paul's overrated. Everybody's saying that now. But as soon as he comes to Houston, what happens? They're undefeated when he plays. They've lost one game with him in the lineup in Houston, and that was the last game he got hurt in. If you want to criticize Chris Paul for anything that's legitimate, it's the fact that he can't stay healthy. And I will totally cop to that. But as far as his production in the playoffs, as far as his production on the court, as far as his ability to bring it in crunch time of big games and in big moments, he's done it time after time after time. Y'all just need to look it up, okay? Look the shit up. He's done it. Okay, he's proven. His track record's proven, but y'all don't want to hear it, though. So he goes to Houston, a better team, and now we're seeing the fruits of that labor when he's out there. They pretty much can't be beaten. At least they haven't been so far. By the way, the Houston Rockets, I believe this year's Houston Rockets with a healthy Chris Paul is the best team outside of the Warriors and Cavs that we've seen in the last 4 years. So make of that whichever you want. I mean, you know, I would not pick the Rockets to beat the Warriors in a series right now, I don't think, but I would not be stunned if they did, because I think that highly of this Rockets team right now, with Chris Paul, of course. And then the latest example is Kevin Durant. I saw Doug Gottlieb get on TV the other day and say that somehow Kevin Durant's past LeBron James now. Huh? What? Huh? Like, where's the Jerry meme that says, nigga, what? Like, where's we need that meme right now for Doug Gottlieb? That makes no sense whatsoever. Okay? How was he better? Why? Because he went to a 73-9 team, and now his responsibilities, like Kevin Love's, have lessened because he's on a team with better teammates, and now he can expend more energy on things like defense and shoot a higher percentage and get cleaner looks, things that he was not doing when he was in Oklahoma City, right? I mean, it's pretty simple. When you go to a team that has 73 wins without you, you can go to that team, and then, yeah, you're going to fit right in and be great. You're going to get a lot of open looks. You're getting a lot of open lanes to the basket. You're going to get a lot of dunks. You're going to get a lot of free throws, and it's all going to work out really well. That doesn't mean you're better than LeBron James. How? Oh, Kevin Durant is known for scoring. He just started playing defense on this level this year, so he's been doing it for 2 months, and all of a sudden, you're going to put him ahead of LeBron? This is the same Kevin Durant that was the primary reason why his team blew a 3-1 lead to those 73-9 Warriors. LeBron James beat the 73-9 Warriors in the finals. Durant joins the 73-win team, and all of a sudden Durant's better than LeBron? Y'all need to check yourselves, man. That doesn't make any sense. You guys really need to understand the nuance of the game of basketball and understand that you can't just look at a player's statistics and gauge and use that as the primary gauge for how good they are. You have to take in the entire picture. You have to look at the context of the situation, the circumstances, the coaching, the teammates, the injuries. There's so many things that go into why teams win and don't win, okay? It's not just as simple as this guy put up numbers in Minnesota, his numbers went down in Cleveland, therefore he's a worse player. That's idiotic. It's the same thing with Durant. Durant goes from one team to this team, and all of a sudden he's better than LeBron? No, he's not. You put LeBron on the Warriors. You think LeBron's numbers wouldn't be spectacular? LeBron's numbers are spectacular no matter what team he's on. It doesn't matter. And he goes to the finals no matter what team he's on. If he's got bum teammates, he's in the finals. If he's got great teammates, he's still in the finals. Okay? Stop it. It just doesn't make any... It's idiotic. It's idiotic. And by the way, LeBron should be MVP. He should be in the driver's seat because if you value Chris Paul properly, tying it all together, y'all, see what I did there? Watch this. If you value Chris Paul properly and understand his impact on the Rockets, you cannot put James Harden ahead of LeBron James for MVP. Because when Chris Paul got hurt, what happened? The Rockets dropped 3 in a row, okay? So that just goes to show you that even though they can win games without Chris Paul, absolutely they can. They're on another level with Chris Paul. LeBron James, consistent. Doesn't matter. He lost Kyrie Irving, and the Cavs haven't replaced him yet, if you haven't noticed, because IT's not back yet. Once Isaiah Thomas gets back, the Cavs are then going to have to infuse him into the offense, and it's going to be on LeBron's leadership to do that on the court, which I think he's great as a leader on the court. You couple that with the other injuries that they've had, Derrick Rose going AWOL again, Tristan Thompson's been in and out of the lineup. Some guys have underperformed like Jay Crowder. LeBron James is it, man. He's the MVP this year. He's going to win it just like Tom Brady's going to win it. And that's where that's at. And last thing I'm going to say is LeVar Ball. I'm going to take 30 seconds to ramble about LeVar. This dude said he's going to launch a league and y'all ate it up. I don't understand why y'all just eat up everything that guy says. Every time LeVar says he's going to make a move, I see black folks on social media eat that shit up with a silver spoon talking about LeVar is a genius. He's a genius, man. He's ahead of his time. He's this, that, and the third. He's a basketball savant. He's a cultural icon. Like, I've seen some of the most idiotic statements about LeVar Ball that don't make sense because he's done nothing really to substantiate any of it. All he's done to this point, he got the TV deal with Facebook for the reality show. He got that, and he got Lonzo to the NBA. I don't know if we're supposed to credit him for that over Lonzo himself, but, you know, whatever hand he had in that, Lonzo's in the NBA now, underperforming, mind you. And meanwhile, his other kids are out stealing merchandise overseas, getting kicked out of school and getting pulled out of high school and getting signed to contracts in Lithuania. And we don't even know if them kids can hoop yet. So why is LeVar Ball some kind of genius? What has he done? Who's buying Big Baller shirts and hats and shoes? I have never seen anybody rocking any of that shit, okay? But for some reason, everybody seems to think that LeVar is some kind of businessman, entrepreneur, genius. He's the next Ted Turner or something like that, or he's the next... I don't know what y'all think he is. He's just a loudmouth right now. Like, until further notice, that dude is just a loudmouth that's making life harder on his kids in terms of pursuing their basketball dreams. And there's been benefit to what he's done. He's great at drawing attention to himself. I'm giving credit for that. But what are the actual residual positive effects of that? What are the net positives from all of his antics? I haven't seen it yet. So until then, he's just a clown to me. The Purge, y'all. Purge. Had to get it all out there for y'all. But I appreciate you listening, man. Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. Check me out again in the future. Jay Hicks about to sign off, y'all. More podcasts to come in the future. More content to come in the future. Going to have an NFL playoff preview up for y'all. So y'all come check us out. Twitter and Facebook.com/HHS Reports, the preseason podcast of the year, y'all. Peace.